Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. It's Sabres Live. It is conference final beginning Tuesday, a matchup we have seen before. It is Florida and Carolina. Welcome in. Marty will join momentarily as we get set for Florida and Carolina. And this is a matchup that obviously ended the wrong way for Carolina just two seasons ago in a four-game sweep. Marty and I talked about it yesterday, just how close the sweep was, and it was so much driven by Matthew Tkachuk. And I think now, you look at it from the Florida standpoint, Tkachuk is claiming to be as kind of good as ever. I don't know if he'll, I mean, he was so good that year before being derailed in the Stanley Cup final with the sternum injury, but he was at his absolute best against Carolina. Now we see this matchup again and wonder whether Carolina can take that next step and not only like win these ultra tight games against the Panthers, but ride what is this newfound depth that has been on display all year, but more pronounced since the dealing of Rantanen to Dallas, and just settling in with the players that they believe have always been, well, I say always, in Eric Tolsky's tenure as GM, he's been able to plug players in and believe that they would play the way Rod Brind'Amour needs them to play. And it has been on display almost magically here in this postseason run. They're averaging 3.5 goals a game, which is almost ideal. It's not best in the league, but it's about what you could dream of. And they're only allowing 1.8. So whether it's forwards, defense, or goaltending, I think one would believe that Carolina matches up as well with Florida now as they ever could have. All that being said, we know this Panthers team to be perhaps deeper than last year. They're averaging 3.7 goals a game, and the latest heroics from Bobrovsky have the goals against down to 2.4. So the goal differential for both these teams that go head-to-head tonight in Carolina, absolutely unreal. There was only a point between them in the regular season, and I think no matter how you start slicing, you're going to look at the Panthers, obviously, as one that has far more established star power from a scoring standpoint. That we know, that's why Carolina did the deal that they did to get Rantanen in the first place. But they're more than comfortable living the other way, and that is just relying on it by committee. So Florida enters at it. I mean, there's so many similarities across the board. Florida comes in average age just under 30. The Carolina Hurricanes are at 29 right now. So there's very little to choose from. And I found it interesting looking more at tomorrow's Western Conference matchup that begins, and that's Edmonton and Dallas. And the talk was how much those two teams had turned over their roster since meeting a year ago in the conference final. Well, the same can be said for both Carolina and Florida. And I think sometimes that gets lost, especially in the Florida equation, because we've seen them on the biggest stage for two consecutive years, runner-up in the Stanley Cup final and then Stanley Cup champions. But if we're looking at Edmonton and Dallas, they've turned over close to 30% of their roster just since last year. And here they are back in the conference finals. If you look at Carolina and Florida from their meeting in 2023, they've turned over more than 50% of their rosters. Now, again, it doesn't feel that way with Florida because the star power remains there. Tkachuk, Reinhardt, Barkov, Bennett, Bobrovsky, Ekblad, Forsling. But as we're learning, if we didn't know it before, it's everything else that you add to your core that can ultimately make a huge difference. So Carolina still has the Ajos of the world. They still have Freddie Anderson in goal, albeit it's always kind of like this with Freddie because you don't see the same amount of games played. But when Marty joins, we're going to talk a little bit more about just like how real is this goaltending matchup here as far as should Freddie Anderson get a little bit more credit than what he's probably getting, because anybody that's building side-by-side, tail of the tape here, they're most likely going to give the check mark to Bobrovsky. But did you know that regular season-wise in their careers, like Freddie Anderson wins at a higher percentage than Bobrovsky? Granted, he's played 250 games fewer despite being similar age. And there's a number of reasons for that. Most notably injury, you know, kind of almost nagging type injuries that have felled Anderson. But just this year alone, Anderson reached a milestone that probably got lost in whatever happens during the course of an 82-game regular season. He became the second fastest goalie in NHL history to win 300 games. Only Andrei Vasilevsky did it quicker. So that's pretty elite company. The problem for Freddie is it took him to age 35 to get here, but it doesn't change the fact that he's been a part of two Jennings winning teams for lowest goals against in the course of his career. And already being over 300 wins with an opportunity under contract next year, and who knows how this playoff goes, and like what if Freddie's number one again next year, which is possible. Let's say over the next two seasons he throws in another 50 to 60 wins. Then all of a sudden you're looking at high 300s. And if, dare I say, Carolina with Freddie Anderson, and I am picking the Hurricanes to win this series, like, what if Freddie Anderson wins a cup this year and finds himself in the hunt with a very good Carolina team again next year? Does the narrative on Freddie Anderson change dramatically? And do all of a sudden we look at him as one of the best of his era? I know it seems a little far-fetched, but there are little markers along the way that Anderson has knocked off. And not to mention, we're talking about this because he's the best goaltender statistically in these playoffs so far, as the Hurricanes have been on an ultra efficient run as they get set to take on Florida tonight. I wonder just what people's perception of Freddie Anderson, whether it will have changed at all, but just what it will be when this playoff season comes to an end. So tonight the Hurricanes take on the Panthers, the Florida squad that just finished off the Maple Leafs on Sunday. So next to no recovery time here for this Florida team. And I have to say my instinct was like, the NHL really could have waited here. But then it's like, no. The defending champs knew the bed that they were laying in. I mean, they had a chance to wrap this up on home ice in game six, and we wouldn't have been talking about this at all. So they knew exactly what they had to do. They stubbed their toe on home ice, take care of business in game seven, obviously packed for this, and here they are ready to roll with just a day between games in game seven and game one. So, you know, will it be another Matthew Tkachuk show in this series? Will it be special teams? I mean, you could give a slight edge to Carolina in that regard right now, but I think for me, one of the most, kind of curious roster building, team building details was just the fact that the turnover for Edmonton and Dallas 1 year to the next, the turnover from Carolina and Florida 2 years removed now, from the 2023 conference final. It's pronounced, and all this is, in a way, I mean, everything we talk about it is in a way relative to what the Sabres are doing. So you look at, okay, how much roster turnover is still needed? Is it, there's obviously not a magic number. There's never a magic number that works for all teams. But if you just take it back to 2023 and what we're talking about here with Florida and Carolina, and I mentioned that both those teams are over 50% roster turned over, the Sabres have, like from the final night of the 22-23 season, the Sabres have 12 players remaining from the 26 who were listed on the roster that night. So they've turned over at the exact same rate as these other teams that we're talking about that are in the Final Four. But the question remains, how much more do they need to turn it over from how this past season ended? Maybe Marty was listening to some of this. I mean, he has a habit of not listening very much, but it's understandable. Marty, how much, and welcome, how much more turnover do you foresee slash is necessary for this Sabres team?
That's a great question. I foresee that it's necessary to have turnover. And, obviously they did bring in some good pieces last year. When you're looking at McLeod was a great piece, and a couple years back, Greenway coming in, there's been some really good additions. And by the way, Duffer, I'm sorry I'm late. My computer's clock right now says 12:02. Like, I was looking at my computer's clock, and I'm like, I know I'm going to be running late, but I'm going to be fine. So, yeah, I guess I'm looking at my phone, and it's 12:10. So my computer's clock is 8 minutes behind, which is not a good thing.
I don't even know how that happens.
I can't even change it. I have tried to change it before.
What? Are you serious? This is an ongoing thing?
This is an ongoing thing.
I needed to know this a long time ago.
Well, I usually don't pay attention to my computer's clock, but somehow I was looking at my computer's clock, and
well, you look lovely, so that's a boon for the radio side today.
Blame Toronto. That's what it is. So anyway,
well, Patrick Waugh says we don't need Toronto.
Blame Toronto. Oh, by the way, I told them everything you needed to, you wanted me to tell them.
Even the all caps portion?
The all caps portion, especially. I told them that you were angry. But anyway, so.
I'm a TSN alum in a slight extension of the brand way. So,
And you know everybody there, and you.
Well, I don't know about that. I had hair back in the day when I worked with them, so.
Yeah,
which leads me, by the way, let's get off on the lighter note before you answer the question of how much turnover is necessary. Who is your, is there a celebrity lookalike for you? Like, that people say, you remind me of, obviously people that don't know hockey don't know you.
There's a guy, and let me see if I can find his name, because I believe he is... So James Marsden, you guys would not know who he is. He plays the guy, the reporter in 27 Dresses. He's also in, what movie is he in? He is in Cyclops. Sonic the Hedgehog. He's in Enchanted. Anyway, that's who people always come. And I never remember who the guy is. I never remember his name. I know his name is James, but I don't remember. That's who people have kind of... Mm-hmm. Put pictures side by side when my hair's a little longer and whatever, but yes. And I think producer Jeff says yes. He thinks that this guy has a little bit of a same look.
Okay. Who do you think I got likened to while riding in the back of an Uber from Hollywood to LAX just last week when I took my cap off and was wearing sunglasses?
Ooh, so this is obviously a celebrity we're talking about.
Oh, this is a pretty big celebrity, yeah.
Pretty big celebrity.
I've never heard this comparison back in the day, and then a few days later, I decided to look it up, and I found one picture where I was like, it's not that far off. But the best part was I was with Izzy, my oldest, so yeah. we were dying at the original comparison here.
Okay, I'm trying to
think. And
yes,
bald celebrity, the obvious go-to here. So,
who was the boxing referee back in the days? But it's not a big celebrity,
so it wouldn't matter. This guy was big screen and small screen star.
Big screen. Oh, Miles Lane was the guy. So thank you, Jeff. Producer Jeff is on the button right now. So Miles Lane would have been the guy. Big star and small screen star. I don't. Oh, Bruce Smith. Bruce Smith. Bruce Willis.
Yes.
Yes, Bruce Willis. Yes, because you said big screen and small screen. So,
dude,
because he was a small screen star before.
If you were on a newlywed game, we would win. The amount.
I can't believe I said Bruce Smith, but Bruce Willis is the guy. Yes.
Oh my God. Well, the Bruce Smith is funny because
he's also bald. So it works.
Because at one point in the last couple of years, someone, it had nothing to do with looks. It was only because of the name Brian, and somebody said Brian Daboll.
Oh yeah, okay.
So this is really, we're stretching out an awful long ways here. But yes, Bruce Willis.
Okay.
The driver's like, do you often get, you know, mistaken for Bruce Willis? And I'm looking at my lack of muscles and general poor physique, and I'm thinking, no.
That's not only that, but I think Bruce Willis is dealing with a lot of health issues right now. He wouldn't be out in public.
Me too, but thankfully, at this point,
you guys have that in common right now, to a certain extent. But yes, Bruce, man, ding, 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 Bruce Willis today.
Well, this is what happens when you arrive late. In some ways, you still arrived on time, so I'm grateful for that.
Sorry about that, but yes.
No, that's okay.
The turnover is an interesting question, Duffer, because, okay, so with the Leafs losing in the playoffs, now the big question in Toronto is, okay, will they change the core four? Will there be turnover, right? And then, but at the end of the day, I debated this like yesterday, today, like, is this the best case scenario for the Leafs to say, we're going to let Mitch Marner walk to a UFA because they're not going to recuperate any assets from that? Is it better to re-sign Marner and trade something else? But if you re-sign Marner, then you're stuck because everybody's got no movement clause. So then you have zero roster turnover. Mm. Even though the Leafs brought in, you know, they brought in Lawton at the deadline, Steven Lawrence in the offseason. You've got some change. But when I think of Larson, Tanev,
goaltending, like they've made lots of change.
They made lots of change. But when I look at teams and roster turnover, to me, it's top guys. It's like IN, guys that have a big impact on your team. Like the Florida Panthers bringing in, you know, Reinhardt and Tkachuk, like that is a roster turnover. Bennett, you know, Seth Jones, like that's a whoosh, that's big pieces that make a difference. The Carolina Hurricanes trying to get Mikko Rantanen and whatnot. Well, it still was a big swing for them. I'm looking at the Sabres and I'm like, okay, roster turnover is fine. Every year you got 3, 4, 5 new guys and you got prospects that are coming up and it changes your roster. But teams that have shaken up their main guys, their core, Washington, right? Shaken up the main guys, like the changes that Washington made. Like that, to me, that's where it becomes significant in your roster turnover.
Well, so you haven't answered it yet. Not that I anticipated that you would, but let me phrase it a different way that, again, ties it back in with Edmonton and Dallas, who each have, you know, for argument's sake, 7 new players in the mix from a year ago. Like their average age, the Oilers are the oldest in the final four, 30.7.
Yep.
Dallas is 29.6. The Panthers are 29.8. Carolina is 28.9. As you see, not a lot of wiggle room here. So let me ask it in a different way. How much more age do the Sabres need? Because on April 17th, the final day of game notes, game 82 for this past season, the Sabres were at 25.8.
Yeah.
Now, they will age from April through September to the tune of almost 10 players on the team.
Yeah.
Being a year older. Is age just a number? Does it matter in this discussion? Does it tie in with the amount of turnover that you think is needed?
I think age matters. And I think I always thought, you know, you can have young players that have a lot of experience. But I go back to my own experience with the Flyers. Look, we had Mike Knuble and Jason Smith and Darian Hatcher, and we had older players on the team my first year with the Flyers. And then they felt that the next group of younger players had gotten the experience. Now, a couple of years in the NHL, the Mike Richard, Jeff Carter, you know, those type of guys. And they were going to be able to say, oh, Let's move out the old guys. Let's move in the new young guys. And it's going to be the same thing. And it wasn't. It took 2 years for those guys to get to a level where, well, they got back to a Stanley Cup Finals, but it took a couple of years to go through some ups and downs. Maybe it was unnecessary. Maybe if you keep older players, you can kind of smooth out that ride, that ascension, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, age is not just a number. Obviously, the past few years here in Buffalo will show you that. Always one of the youngest team in the league, the youngest team in the league, and not able to make that push when you need that push. So age is important. But I do feel that your top guys now are getting older. Mm-hmm. The Tage Thompson is getting older. Alex Tuck is getting older. Rasmus Dahlin is getting older. You still have some youth, and Peterka and Quinn and Power, whatnot. I think that's where you got to be able to just bring in a little bit of age to stabilize it, so that if you're going through some rough patches with Power, somebody that has more experience and age can stabilize that. That I think that's important for the Sabres to look forward and their roster, you know, turnover to think like, okay, what if we go from 25 to 27 and a half, right? I mean, it's only 2 years, but it makes a big difference.
Well, it could, but when you look at the roster and how it ended last year, they already extended older players, older in quotations, but more established in Zucker and Greenway. So one doesn't assume that they're moving off those players. Mm-hmm. And then through process of elimination or lack thereof, you start wondering, okay, well, how much are they actually going to turn this over from the end of last year? Right?
Well, because, you mentioned Zucker, and that's a perfect example.
Is it going
Zucker's
to be
a perfect example, Duffer.
Because when you look at the forwards, it's hard to imagine that it's going to look that different. Am I wrong?
Well, no, because there's not a lot. There's too many players. Like if you had, big holes and you're like, okay, we have four guys coming in and only one going out and there's your roster turnover. Yeah. Right now, there's one spot that we've discussed, right? A top six winger, maybe a big fish, like we've mentioned, a Mitch Marner or whatever. Like there is an offer sheet, somebody that you go after and you say, we're going to plug that right there. But everything else is filled. Like you have too many players. If Norris comes back and is down the middle and you have Kulik and you have McLeod and all of a sudden is Krebs your fourth line center? What happens with Tyson Kozak, who is a young player that maybe is prime for the next? There's already too many bodies. Yeah. So maybe the roster turnover comes in from more of a subtraction type of thing and less of a, like you're not subtracting four and adding four. Maybe you're subtracting three and adding one or four and adding two. That's maybe where the roster turnover comes into play. Zucker is a perfect example when it comes to age. Mm-hmm. Like you could tell that his experience, his age, his maturity had an impact not just on him, had an impact on Jiří Kulík, had an impact on other players, and that stabilized things. Greenway went in the lineup, I think has the same impact. Older, more experienced, good. So I'm not saying go after 35-year-old guys over here. Although if you want to bring in a John Tavares, I'd be okay with that. But there's guys that are in the 28 to 30, 31 that could fit the mold perfectly.
Well, obviously when you start talking about free agency and the mere nature of it, that comes with age because you don't get to UFA status without being at a higher age than what the Sabres average currently is. Even Mitch Marner, who most people would still view as young and in his prime, is 28 years old.
Yes.
That's 2 years older than the Sabres average right now. Matt Duchene is 34. You would have won the trivia if you had asked me today, by the way, as Dallas gets ready for Edmonton, who was the Stars' leading point getter this year? I wouldn't have said Matt Duchene because I would have focused on the goal scorers, but Duchene had an awesome year. He scored 30, had 82 points. Yeah. I wasn't dismissing Matt. I just didn't think he was the actual leader of the team.
But and you look at Granlund, who's great with the Dallas Stars now. He's 33 years old. I mean, you're getting age if you're looking that route, but it's not a bad thing on the short term. I think it helps.
What is, and this is very.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Going to be very brief, but since I was perusing again the UFA list, what is Ryan Donato's real value?
Well, real value when you look at him on the open market,
which he is at age 29 after his one and only 30 goal season.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's probably going to be in the $5 million range.
How about take away the dollars and what his value is? Like, is he worth signing?
I would say there's other players in front of him that I would look at before looking at Ryan Donato. Okay. And that's just me. Like, I'm looking at Nick Ehlers, for example. That's a guy that he's 29, so he fits a little bit better. He's got, you know, more upside, and he's going to be more expensive. But that is a guy. If he becomes a UFA, I'm looking at ahead of Ryan Donato. And I know everybody's talking about the Sam Bennett's and whatever. Like, there is other players before Ryan Donato. Ryan Donato doesn't move the needle for me, like, in the way that I think others would if you're looking at the UFA market this summer.
Hockey tonight, it is the Eastern Conference Final, kicking off in Raleigh as the Hurricanes host the Panthers. The West gets going tomorrow. The Amerks resume tomorrow. They are 1-1 in their series with Laval. We will explore yet again in our next segment, as it pertains to Rochester, what is goaltender interference? And that will be done with tongue-in-cheek and with some levity. So if you have a chance, please be with us on the MSG side, because you're going to want to see some of the takeaways from the Friday night game, which was ultimately a win for the Amerks to even the series. And it came after a goalie interference call and a power play winner from Jiří Kulík. Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, games 3, 4, and if necessary, 5 in this North Division final. We've got Bandits at home this Saturday in Banditland. Looking forward to filling this barn up. And it's getting close, folks. So if you haven't got your ticket yet, this is my friendly advice and best that I can give you on a Tuesday. Don't wait any longer. They're becoming scarce. Bandits.com/tickets. It's Saturday afternoon, 4:30 p.m., third and deciding game between the Bandits and the Rush. Buffalo, with a win, would have 7 NLL titles, yeah, most in league history. We're back after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Rolling right along here on a Tuesday, Sabres Live. We have conference final play beginning tonight in the NHL with Carolina and Florida. Tomorrow it's Edmonton and Dallas in a redo of last year. And tomorrow we finally get back to the Amerks, who last played on Friday, Marty, yep, with a home ice win. And this is hard because I feel like I can't give entire context that led up to this moment. But I will say that Wi-Fi's brother,
Florian Jacki?
Yes.
Not Harbor. Harbor and Florian. They are the Bash brothers for sure.
So Jacki with Laval. I mean, I wish I had a reel of all the penalties he should have been called for already in the first two games of the series, including his very first shift in game 2, where he basically elbowed Yop so hard in the head that I was like, first of all, how no penalty? And how is the captain going to keep playing? Yes. Anyway, funny how it goes, because Jacki in the third got called for this, and I need your take on goalie interference.
Well, I think that this was, a little bit of a sell job by Devin Levi. A little bit, just because I want to protect my goalie union card here, because Florian Jacky basically stopped at the top of the crease, a hard stop, and Levi, going for the puck, reached out with his glove, bumped into him, and then just threw himself into the net. But hey, you know what? That's part of the job, selling it a little bit. And then Jacky ended up like going down by, being escorted by the linesman towards the penalty box after that. But yeah, that led to a goal. That led to a power play goal, which was huge. Yuri Kulik. But yes, there's penalties that you should be called for that you don't. And then there's penalties that you get called for and you shouldn't. And this was one that I don't think was a penalty, and it ended up costing Laval.
I'll say it. I think it's the worst goalie interference penalty I've ever seen.
And hey, we just showed a clip of me and Rochester taking a punch to the face, going down. We showed that like last week, and there was no penalty on the call. So I know what it's like sometimes to get bumped and not having any penalties called.
Incredibly, it did lead to the game-winning goal, as you mentioned.
Yes.
And that doesn't happen without a stunning pass from Rusek, mm-hmm. and the velocity, the release, the technique, the ability of Yuri Kulik, which we've talked about over and over and mm-hmm. over. This turns out to be the game winner. He's top 10 in playoffs in points. He has 2 goals. Both have been lasers on the power play, yes. including one against Syracuse at the end of the second period, which wasn't a game winner. It just felt like a game winner because it took the very tight game from 1-0 to 2-0 Amherst into the third period, and they were very strong the rest of the way in winning that game. When you see this, dare I say, expected from Kulik, and marry it with his post-game comments that he still feels like he has way more to give in this series and hopefully beyond in this series, what do you make of what you're seeing from Yuri and potentially his understanding of the impact he still needs to have?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, look, the goal that he scored there, it's a great shot, but he's shooting the puck more, right? Like 5 shots in that game. Mm-hmm. He had 5 shots in game 3 against Syracuse, 4 shots in game 2 where he scored against Syracuse. To me, it's about the volume of shots. Yuri's got a great shot, but I'd love for him to be like an Ovechkin type. Remember when Ovi would have 7-8 shots a game and he was a wrecking ball, and that's why he scored so many goals, because he kept shooting. I would love for Yuri to have 6-8 shots like one of those games and then get a couple of goals. Mm-hmm. And I think that also is where I would want Yuri's game to go to the NHL. Like get 3-5 shots per game at the NHL level. Like, don't just get out of it with 1 or 2. No, it's not easy, but have that mentality that you can shoot the puck from anywhere and beat goalies, because he has proven it at the AHL level, and he's proven it at the NHL level with a smaller sample. But I still think that if you give him 5 shots per game, mm-hmm. the odds are on his side. Look, he's going to be a 12-13% shooter, maybe 15% shooter in his career because of the quality of his shot. Mm-hmm. That means it's every 2 games. If he has 5 shots per game, 5 shots, he's getting a goal every 2 games. Every 2 games, yeah. Getting a goal.
I think that's a 40 pace. That's unrealistic to have 400 shots when playing with Tage Thompson.
Yes, so it is unrealistic. And I love your math, your quick math. 5 shots, 80, 400. Really on the ball.
Thank you. But even if it's 250, which I think is a reasonable number,
yeah.
You're obviously going well over 20. Last year, all of the production was even strength. The dream scenario, I think, from a depth standpoint, would be to have a more effective number one unit next year and yes. have a very confident, with a prolific passer potentially on the second unit as well. And I think if prolific is too strong of a word. I think you already have defensemen more than capable of setting up Jiří Kulík on the second unit to have an impact here. But all of this ends up coming back to, and whether you want it to be Marner, and you've said it enough that I believe you do, but if you put more of a playmaker on Buffalo's top line, and JJ became more of a playmaker last year, even though the goals total was almost the same, his assist total went up, but he's not Mitch Marner. What could you possibly envision Kulík and Thompson producing if they had a Marner-esque left winger?
A playmaker, a passer. I think I could see. Look, Kulík, he averaged 2 shots per game, a little slight over 2 shots per game last year. Even if it's just 3 per game and he gets to 240 or 250, like you said, it's 30 goals. I'm saying that's 30 goals. That is guaranteed. You have 3 shots per game average, that's 30 goals. I think Tage, with a playmaker, a player like a Mitch Marner or somebody to that level, I think we're looking at 50. I think that's, and if you're getting 80 goals from Jiří Kulík and Tage Thompson, I mean, that's incredible.
You're getting 100 from the line because Marner at minimum is going to get 20.
You're 100 goals from a line.
Right.
Think about it. You either have to have 330, 335 like goal scorers, or you get 150, a 30, and a 20, and that's 100. That is, like, if you score 3 on average per game, you're at 240 for the season. Mm-hmm. Almost half your goals would come from one line if they were to get 100.
It's not McGillney, LaFontaine, Andrechuk from 92-93 before Dave got traded, but in today's world, it would feel like it's close. Now, if not Marner, which, dare I say, is probably likely, then who? Give us your next best fit to potentially fulfill this idea, rounding out Kulík Thompson on a top line.
Well, I mean, I did mention Nick Ehlers, but I think when you have a guy like Nick Ehlers, you're hoping to get more goals from Nick Ehlers, right? I think that's, for me,
I don't think of Ehlers that way. Am I wrong?
He has 24 goals this year, and I think that was a down year. So you look over his career, well, maybe you're right. He's never gone to 30.
Right. He's he's slightly more of a playmaker over the course of his career.
Yeah, and he's a 60 to 70 point guy.
Like, which is Marner's not unlike JJ Paterka is now. So that's where I don't notice much of a change statistically.
Yeah, no, I think there's probably not a big difference. Although if you want to keep JJ in a different role, then all of a sudden, you know, maybe you have JJ with McLeod and Quinn, which was really good. And all of a sudden that changes your dynamic. You have Tuck maybe with Zucker and Kulík. And now you're saying, hey, a couple of veterans, so now that leaves you with Norris Thompson and a hole there. That was Zach Benson often.
Well, I was thinking Paterka, Norris, Tuck. Like, wouldn't that be ideal if the three played together well beyond this top line that has borderline superstar playing next to Kulík and Thompson? Like, if JJ is with Norris and Tuck, that's a really, really, really good second line, is it not?
Really good second line. I just, for me, I have this idea that Norris and Thompson are going to play together. Okay. And I know that a lot of people are saying,
why did we spend the last 10 minutes talking about somebody to play with Kulík and Thompson? You could have interjected here.
I get what you're saying. And I think that's but I also think it works. Like, if you have if you have Kulík and Thompson at 50 and Kulík at 30, then maybe you're moving some pieces around to say, hey, you know what? That's a really good line. And maybe that's JJ there. I don't know. I like a playmaker like you're saying. I like a playmaker on that line. Could it be I'm going to go a little older here. And I don't know that that could it be a Claude Giroux? Claude Giroux is a fantastic playmaker. And now you're looking, that's a little bit more of a stretch. It's not somebody that you would bring in that, but that would fit that role really well. And Claude Giroux could be a power play guy, a playmaker power play guy too, maybe on the second unit.
He's not but leaving, you know that.
I know, but I'm saying like a player like that, like if it wasn't, yeah, I know, he's not leaving Ottawa, but a player like that, like a playmaker guy that could be in for a very short term, you know, a year or two, just to give everybody a little bit more of a chance to get there, to develop a little bit more. So I'm looking at playmakers. I'm looking at guys that have the assist, that have the hockey IQ to be able to know their roles and say, okay, my role is to get Kulik and Thompson going, if that's how you would build that top line.
Well, at his best, and it's, I think, moot now, even though he is a UFA, but he was the guy I talked about at the start of the year, and it's Granlund, because he is far more of a playmaker than a goal scorer.
Yeah.
So, but I don't imagine that that's going to be the case now. It's Team Finland in Dallas. Why would he ever leave?
No, he's not leaving that.
He's made a fair amount of money in the course of his career.
What?
Life would be pretty good for him, presumably, in Dallas from here on out. If they want him, I would think he wants them. I honestly cannot envision Granlund leaving.
What if, and I know this will be weird, but what if it was Patrick Kane? What if, like, years after thinking we would like to have Patrick Kane and he goes to Detroit and whatever, what if it's Patrick Kane, a playmaker like Kane? You say that's short term. Yeah. And now I think your Kulik and Thompson with Kane kind of opens the door to say, okay, that looks like it would work. And then you put Norris with Tuck, right? And now you're giving yourself in Paterka and yourself a really strong top six.
You can't. Kane typically plays his off wing though on the right side. So can I can't imagine him being left here. On that,
I think he could play the left. I'm not moving Thompson. I think they've tried him on the left, and it's awful.
Yeah.
You know, Claude Giroux's a right-handed shot, so he would have to play the left too as a righty. But, you know, I'm not worried about that. I think that those type of players that I think would fit can play anywhere. Mm-hmm. They could play, and maybe it's just saying you're not what you used to be. Mm-hmm. And maybe at your best, you were a right winger, Patrick Kane, on your off wing. But I'm going to put you on the left side because you need to be a facilitator for the other two.
Well, the great news for our audience is you're 8 minutes behind, so your best ideas are yet to come, and we'll try to cram them in next as Sabres Live continues.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Game one tonight, Carolina, Florida. Can Freddie get the better of Bob in the course of this series? Marty?
Yes, he can. It will be a challenge. Obviously, Florida, you know, the reigning Stanley Cup champions have some firepower that did not really shine through in the last round. Like Barkov and Reinhardt had their moment, but, you know, in game seven, it wasn't them. It was Gadjevich, and it was, you know, the depth that really came through, the defense that came through in game five for Florida. So, I think Freddie Anderson is going to have to be really good because the Panthers are going to, and Bobrovsky's going to have to be good too, because Carolina, tons of shot attempts, tons of forechecking, buzzing around. Both goalies are going to, in my opinion, be the difference as to who makes it to the finals.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
How will the narrative change if Freddie Anderson wins a cup?
I think that the narrative for me would stay the same. When Freddie Anderson is healthy, he is one of the better goaltenders. But it's the health that's never really been there. So if he can stay healthy all the way to a Stanley Cup final and potentially winning a cup with Carolina, I think the narrative would still be, if he is healthy, he's one of the better.
I am picking Carolina, just so you know, in this series. In this series, yeah.
I'm picking Carolina in seven.
Wow, look at us being on the same page. Imagine that. Okay.
What do you got for the other one?
We'll do that tomorrow.
Some people have to put their brackets in, their picks in before it starts tonight.
If they've been paying close attention, they would know these answers from you and me already. You might have missed some of it at the start of the show.
I may have.
How many Danish goalies outside of Freddie Anderson have played in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
In the playoffs? He's the only one.
He's the only one. How many in NHL regular season history?
I'm going to say three.
Two.
Okay, who's the other one?
Mad Sogard with the Ottawa Senators.
Yes. I would have, I was trying to think of Danish goalies and I couldn't, so I figured they're pretty rare. They're very rare, but okay, Mads Søgaard is one, and so two of them. That's pretty good.
Do you know that Freddie Anderson's dad played in the Danish league as a goalie for 17 years?
Did not know dad. Good point.
We might resurrect his stats tomorrow on Sabres Live.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.